Hey folks, today on the podcast is Mike Sell, a buddy of mine who is co-owner of Midwest Strength Performance Gym out in Chicago. They actually have three locations now. I actually did this interview back in October and then didn't get around to releasing it till now. But the reason I had him on the podcast is because he ate Chick-fil-A only for 16 weeks and ended up winning a bodybuilding competition. So yeah, for 16 weeks, 4 months, basically, he only ate Chick-fil-A. So he tells a story about how that came to be. He ended up losing 40 pounds of mostly body fat and winning this bodybuilding competition. So I think the thing to know is, you know, Mike is no stranger to bodybuilding competitions. He's no stranger to macronutrients and knowing the science behind eating, as you'll soon see. At one point, he was on the path to becoming a doctor and then pivoted to becoming a gym owner to help people prevent disease rather than treat it. So you'll hear that story. We'll go through the story of eating Chick-fil-A for 4 months straight, and then he'll walk through the mechanics of bodybuilding shows, since I didn't know a lot about it, and I'm guessing you don't as well. And then he'll also get into talking about competitive eating. He's a lover of scientific research and also eating, and so he'll tell some stories about some competitive challenges, including eating a 12-pound lasagna. So super interesting guy, very steeped in the science. I will warn you that we get a little geeky, or you know, he'll get a little geeky on the science of things. And then I'll also warn you that we had some technical difficulties. So in the middle of the podcast, it does get cut off, and then at the very end. But still interesting stuff. Hope you enjoy the episode. And yeah, here's Mike Sell from MSP Gym. All right, folks. Today on the show, we have Mike Sell from MSP Gym. Mike, why don't you give a little bit of background in terms of who you are, what you do, and we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Chris. Very excited to be on your show. Yes, as you said, my name is Mike. I'm a gym owner, co-owner of multiple gyms called Midwest Strength Performance. One of my partners is my wife, so that's very enjoyable being able to work with her. She pretty much runs everything. I just get to coach people. So a little bit about me. Fell in love with fitness when I was 12 years old. Grew up in a neighborhood with a bunch of people. There were 10 of us named Mike, actually. We all wanted to be the most jacked, get better at sport. So started training then. The age of 16, got out of gym class. Started training the faculty in high school, knew that I loved fitness, went to college, thought I was going to be a doctor, interned at a gym in California. From there, I had a vision to open a gym in 2017. After getting my degree, a group of us that worked at a local health club all put in our 2 weeks together, opened the gym, wife came on board in 2021. And yeah, it's been a huge pleasure, but yeah.
So you have three locations currently, and this is how we met. We met through a gym business mentoring company, and I started working with more so your wife because she handles more of the business side of things. Mm-hmm. And so that's how you and I got connected and met. You guys are just outside of, or like in Chicago, right?
Yep.
Area.
Yeah, we're just west of Chicago, about 45-minute train ride.
Got it. And where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up on the East Coast in Massachusetts.
What sports did you play? And what do you think drew you to the lifting side of things?
Yeah, so I grew up playing football, basketball, and baseball. I learned early when I was 12 that I want to be the most jacked Mike in the neighborhood, but the lifting also helped improve my ability to perform well within those sports. So, for example, freshman year in high school, there were some games on the football team that I didn't start. I thought if I just ran a bunch of miles in the off season, that was going to make me a better football player. I actually got slower. But once I started lifting, I realized that my performance within especially football and baseball, drastically improved. I had cut basketball once I got to high school. So by my sophomore year, I was starting at linebacker. And then junior year and senior year, I was all first team All-State for football. And I credit a lot of that to the lifting. I just really enjoyed it. I won the superlative in high school, class health nut, as well as best muscles. So it was an area where I realized that I could utilize science, that it was very, very predictable. What I put in was what I got out. If I was able to hit my nutritional metrics as far as my macros, my calories, be consistent with my training, and utilize and incorporate periodization in a wise way. So a lot of things I did then, and I still do, I'm sure, are maybe not fully evidence-based. There's so much that we don't know. But I was thankful that I did a lot of things right with my training, and I saw the fruits from that.
And we are definitely going to dive into some of the more extreme things we've done. But what did you have a coach, a trainer, a mentor? Like, how did you know what to do at such a young age? Or was it just trial by fire and you just tried everything? And like, where did you get your programming from? What did you know? Like, how did you know how to lift, even like technique wise?
That's a great question. We had the football weight training team, but I didn't want to train at the school. So my parents, they got us a weight set. We had some missionary friends that were going overseas, and they left us their weight set. And I would just go on YouTube and I would watch people train, like Mike O'Hearn, Andy Heyman, Ronnie Coleman. And then I would watch videos of NFL players training. And then there were a couple things that I noticed within all their training. Number one, they defined their goals. They had certain metrics that they were trying to achieve. And then I quickly realized in order to achieve those metrics, they had to practice those things. So without knowing what the word specificity meant, I quickly intuitively knew if I wanted to get better at bench press, I had to bench press. And then from there, I also knew and watching them as well, they're lifting so much weight. They probably didn't do that day one. They probably slowly worked their way up. So intuitively, I started incorporating progressive overload. And then after maybe about 2 months of training, I noticed that I started to get pretty sore. Joints were hurting. So then I took an easy week of training. So without realizing it, I was managing my fatigue. I took a deload week. So a lot of it was trial by fire. A lot of it was observation and trying to incorporate those principles. And then I would train muscles when I felt like they were ready to be trained again, when I felt like I could get overload. So accidentally, I was utilizing or incorporating SRA curves, stimulus recovery adaptation. And then when I would come up back for my easy week, I would change the movements a little bit, because I knew there were other movements I wanted to try, but I tried to build them based on what I was doing previously. So I kind of just naturally incorporated phase potentiation. And then it kind of worked out where, like, in season, I knew that I was doing a lot of activity. I had to have my body healthy for the sport itself. So I did less training in season, which I guess is typically recommended. So a lot of it was based on intuition, observation, and listening to my body. And then I later found out that these principles exist and they can be incorporated into any type of periodization scheme based on the adaptations that the person's looking for. So I kind of got lucky.
And you had mentioned that you almost went to school to be a doctor, but then obviously did not. So talk about that decision making and where you pivoted to.
Yeah, so I came out to the Midwest, graduated from Wheaton College. I knew that doctors, they helped people, they served others, which I thought was really cool. It's something that I wanted to do. I like being around people. People excite me. And then I knew being a doctor, you're working with different cases, depending on the field of what type of doctor you are. I was also thinking doctor, physical therapist. So I wasn't quite sure, but I knew I'm just going to get a pre-med degree and go from there. My freshman year, I was playing football, got too many concussions. So I had to stop doing that. And I remember praying and asking God, what do you want from me? And from there, overnight, I had a vision of opening a gym where I'd be able to serve others, love others, speak truth into others, and then also help them make the adaptations. And I'd already started training people, again, when I was 14 or 16 years old in high school, getting out of gym class. And it's actually how I really got close to my wife, Ashley. I trained her and a group of other female athletes my freshman year at Wheaton College. So it's just something that I really loved. So there's the gym out in California, Metroflex Long Beach. I'd heard of it because of other YouTube celebrities that I liked watching, like CT Fletcher, Mike Rashid. So when I was out there visiting Ashley, stopped by the gym, talked to the owner and said, what do I got to do to be an intern here? And he said, just show up whenever works for you and we'll get you on our internship program. And when I did that, I absolutely loved it. While at Wheaton, I did research on polycystic kidney disease, and I tried to immerse myself into things that were more practical as far as my major. I interned as well at a physical therapy clinic, and then via comparison, I just realized fully my passion was fitness. That's what I was meant to do. And that's kind of how I pivoted more so into that.
Got it. Yeah. And Ashley is from California. So yeah, it sounds like you guys spent some time out there, but then you ended up both moving back to the Wheaton area and opening.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like you guys worked at a gym first, or you worked at a gym.
Yeah. Just over the summer for the internship.
Gotcha.
She was interning and she's political poli-sci. So she's working with politicians. She interned with Michelle Obama in the White House, and I interned at a gym.
Mm-hmm. It's like the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Michelle Obama is into fitness, so yeah, that makes
sense. Yeah, I mean, Ashley got to see Michelle Obama's workout journal and work out with the Secret Service. Awesome. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So eventually you are working at a health club. You have some other trainers it seems like talking about opening up your own gym. Mm-hmm. And so you go do that. And this is 2017?
Yeah, this is 2017. So it was myself, TJ, Zane, Jimmy, and then there was a fifth partner who also opened the gym with us as well. He was doing more of the business side, Phil. It was we were so naive at that point. We didn't really know what to expect. We just knew that we had to get out of the corporate setting. We wanted freedom. We wanted to be able to coach people in the way that we wanted to. We wanted to offer products that we thought were going to be better for the results and adaptations of our clients, that gave us more flexibility to serve them better. And when you're working at a health club, there's a lot of shackles on you in terms of what you can and cannot do as far as product.
Right.
Right. So we all put our 2 weeks together at the same time on a Friday morning at 5 a.m. and opened the gym 5 miles away to avoid the non-compete and just went from there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Living your dream, but I'm sure that was probably a nightmare for the health club owners to hear that.
Yeah, they threatened me. They're like, if you bring any clients, we're going to come after you. And which was funny because they wouldn't even let me train people at the time because they required a college degree and I was still finishing it. They changed their agreement with me a couple times, but even though they were dishonest, it was actually a good thing, and I'm glad they were, because it kept me from staying there and it allowed me to do what I was meant to do quicker. So in that regard, awesome. I'm really grateful to them.
Mm-hmm. So at MSP Gym, what do you say you offer? Like, so if someone's wondering what you guys do there, what would you say?
Yeah. So what we do is we offer a customized approach that can help fulfill the adaptations of whatever they are looking for. So as far as products, we have our general classes, but our classes, while general, they're pretty utilitarian. They're able to fulfill the adaptations of which most people are seeking. We incorporate Western periodization into the strength movement, which is set up first. So people can expect to get stronger as well as build lean tissue on those movements. And then there's a circuit of accessories that support the main movement. And then there's a cardio finisher. Every movement can be modified to each individual's needs and abilities. And then every coach is well versed on each member of our gym. We're a community gym. We do 90-day check-ins to make sure people are trending in the way that they're supposed to. And we also heavily encourage recording metrics to ensure they're getting better. We also offer personal training subscription where people are able to meet with a coach. The plans are completely customized again to what they want. And then we also will send extra workouts based on their volume landmarks, et cetera, where they can come in, do the extra workouts, get 24/7 access to the gym. And then we also do a lot of online coaching people around the country, sending customized programs. We offer nutrition. So we are the one Renaissance Periodization affiliated gym in the country. So those nutrition products are not just taking into account like an individual's calories, macros that they need, but we also look at behavioral patterns, learning objectives, etc. One of our locations does semi-private training, which is just customized programming in a group setting where each person's on a slightly different program that helps fulfill, again, the adaptations they're seeking. But they were able to do in that like kind of corporate or community environment, which is really nice. Our new location, FTX, is a CrossFit gym. So there we have the private training, but we also offer CrossFit classes. So that's kind of the product side. And then beyond that, like I said, we're very community-based. So we do a bunch of events every year that brings people together. What I think makes MSP special is we have a broad range of people that would never meet each other otherwise. We have Division I athletes that we coach, but we also have your 70-year-old grandmas. And everyone at the gym matters equally. Everyone's goals matter equally. And you'll see, like this one kid I coach that's awesome that's playing football at Princeton, he'll be encouraging the 70-year-old grandpa as he tries to deadlift. So we offer a safe space for people, a sanctuary where no matter what's going on in their life, they know that MSP is a constant. It's a constant where they're cared for. It's a constant where they matter. It's a constant where their results matter, where they're going to be put first, and where they're going to meet a lot of their best friends.
That's awesome. I love that. I mean, you're obviously well-versed in the training side of things and the nutrition side of things, but you're also, you know, creating this positive community where people can feel like they can be themselves and train in a way to, you know, optimize their life, which is awesome. I want to bring it more to you and some of your nutrition, you know, journeys, specifically most recently, and you can correct me on these details, but it seemed like you ate Chick-fil-A only, for 12 weeks. So about 90 weeks. Days. 16 weeks. Okay. So 4 months.
16 weeks. Of, 112 days, 16 weeks.
Of only Chick-fil-A. So anything that you ate was from Chick-fil-A. And I have to, I mean, I obviously have to ask about what you did on Sundays because they're closed. But yeah, I guess just for people who don't know you or haven't followed your journey on that, give people the rundown as to like why you did that, how you came about, you know, choosing Chick-fil-A. And then obviously the details of like, what you ate during that time. And then also with the caveat or the background that you were training for a bodybuilding competition. So this was specifically something that you had either already been in a gaining phase or maybe even used that to do gaining phase and then had to cut for your show. Mm-hmm. And you ended up winning the show, which I'm giving away the end. But I want people to understand that this is a very specific thing that we were aiming for. So,
So 16 weeks at Chick-fil-A. One reason I did that was because I knew it would be fun. It would be unique. I've never seen anyone prep for a bodybuilding show only eating fast food. So Ashley and I, a couple years ago, we had done a case study where we did nothing but Chipotle for 2 months. Then we did a vegan diet for 2 months. Then we did McDonald's for 2 months. We matched the calories between each diet and we analyzed a bunch of different markers for health. I've always liked research. Again, I did research at Wheaton College. My mentor there was the head of the Applied Health Science program. He mentored me in nutrition. I was a TA for nutrition, got to write lectures for nutrition and do that. So it's always been a passion of mine. Chick-fil-A, again, I wanted to do a show, wanted to do something unique. Chick-fil-A's items on their menu, there's a lot of options that have macros that would be advantageous for prepping for a show. So a lot of lean protein sources, the food tastes good. There's a location that's pretty proximal to our gym where we have a relationship with the owner of that location. One of the other coaches has trained him in the past. So I reached out to them and he had offered 50% off. So being able to have that connection, the sponsorship. And it was funny. I told him when I gave him my initial pitch, I said, look, I believe because I'm going to be losing a lot of body fat, that my health markers will improve. So this will be a great look for Chick-fil-A. A lot of our members love you guys, but because we're so proximal, especially if our members see my markers get better, I get more jacked, etc. Only eating your food, it's going to drive business to you. I also told them, though, there's no guarantees. I'm not massaging the data. I'm not manipulating the data. If it shows that I get really, really unhealthy, I'm not changing that. And I gave him that full disclaimer. I shared some of the literature showing that when individuals lose a lot of fat, typically markers such as lipid profile, inflammation, blood pressure all improve. So I think he appreciated my authenticity and he thought it was kind of neat. So he came on board with it. Another motivation for doing this is Chick-fil-A uses a lot of seed oils. For some reason, the fitness community right now, people are against seed oils. They think that they increase inflammation. Tufts has done a ton of research on this. And when equal dosage of seed oils is equated to equal dosage of animal saturated fat, when you look at markers within lipid profiles, as well as inflammation, seed oils are a lot better. They don't seem to increase inflammation as much. So there's that. So I kind of wanted to push back against some of the fitness community that maybe was spewing out information that wasn't authentic or at least based on truth. And then Chick-fil-A also uses a lot of monosodium glutamate to season their food. For some reason, the fitness industry and public health when it comes to social media is concerned that it seems to be very against MSG, but MSG has been around since the 60s or 70s. There seems to be no ill effects from it in compared to like normal sodium. Obviously, if you have too much sodium and you're sodium sensitive, your blood pressure can spike. But because I was in a deficit, I knew that my blood pressure would go down. So I wanted to push back against a little bit of that. I think MSG gets a bad rap because it's usually associated with foods that are very sugary, fatty, salty, calorically dense. And it's those aspects of the food that cause people to gain weight when eaten in too high of a dosage too regularly, but it's not the MSG's fault. So I wanted to push back against that a little bit. I wanted to show people that they could be flexible with their dietary approach. Typically, bodybuilding is seen as a sport where people eat nothing but broccoli, rice, and tilapia to get their thin skin, which is not based in fact. So there's a lot of these misconceptions out there that I wanted to address in an N equals one case study on myself. And then the other aspect of Chick-fil-A is I don't like cooking because Ashley and I were very, very busy. So if I wasn't doing Chick-fil-A, I'd probably be doing just mostly prepackaged Costco meals where I cook in the microwave like I've done in the past. Oatmeal, which is still fine, but Chick-fil-A tastes better. So that component's kind of nice. And then with Chick-fil-A, they have all their macros, calories on their website. So as far as computing, making sure that I'm eating the right amount as I go along in a predictable format, I knew it would be pretty easy. So selfishly, I wanted to do that because I thought I'd have a higher chance of success. And based on the amount of time I have, it freed up time.
There's so many questions I want to go with, but let's start with, did you have your macronutrients planned out first and then choose your menu items?
Yeah.
Like, how did you approach what you would eat each day? And then obviously, because it's over the course of 16 weeks, there's some transition as you get closer to the show, right? So how you're eating in the beginning of the 16 weeks, I imagine, was different than the end. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk about like how you chose what you ate, what you actually ate. Was it three meals a day? Was it more than that?
So I knew my maintenance calories were about 4,000 going into this. I'm pretty calorically wealthy, which is nice. So I computed that. I was weighing 239.1 pounds. I had to lose at a more aggressive rate than typically I'd recommend to clients. So typically we recommend not losing more than 1% body weight per week. If you lose too quickly, you're at a higher risk of running into lots of dietary fatigue, or especially your ghrelin spikes, your hunger hormone, your leptin goes down, and you're at a higher risk of losing lean tissue. But in order to get stage lean, that's number one priority for a show. I had to be in a decent deficit. And then I utilized data points such as daily weigh-ins, initial DEXA reading. DEXA's not perfect, but it's the best we have currently for measuring body fat percentage. So through Wheaton College, I'm able to do DEXA. I buddies with another professor over there who let me do that, which was really nice. So in order to get to where I had to in 16 weeks, I had to lose. I wanted to start out slightly aggressive because I had more body fat and lower risk of losing lean tissue. The fatter you are, the more aggressive you can be because you have the extra fat. So I started at 3,000 calorie-ish average. Leg days, I would get a bit more calories, about 3,300-ish hundred, down to 2,700 on rest days. And then protein and fat stayed pretty constant. So protein was between 220 and 240 grams per day. Generally, I recommend around a gram to a gram and a half of protein per pound of lean mass. The leaner you get, typically I recommend going closer to that 1.5 grams of protein per pound of lean mass to stave off the potential of lean tissue loss. You need enough fat for normal hormonal function, absorbing fat-soluble vitamins and cellular health. But beyond that, the fat was going to be less conducive towards my performance in the gym. And I wanted to have more carbs because carbs are protein sparing. So my fat was about 60-ish to 70 grams per day. And then I just filled in the rest with carbs. And then my carbs are a little bit higher on the leg day, just because leg day would require a bit more. And then my chest, shoulder, arm day didn't need quite as much. And then rest day, I could go a little bit lower. So starting out, I was losing rather drastically 3-ish pounds per week. And then when I did a DEXA at the 8-week mark or halfway through, I kind of had an idea of what rate I had to lose at in order to get to a body fat that was competitive on stage. And then it was kind of neat with the DEXAs. I actually gained lean mass over the 16 weeks, which is typically unheard of when you're in such a hypocaloric state and well-trained individual and not using anabolic steroids. So it was a drug tested show. I had to do a polygraph as well as a urine test as well. Yeah. And then,
at the beginning of this, what you were at 239, for total weight, what was your breakdown of, lean tissue, so muscle mass, and then body fat mass or body fat percentage.
So my lean tissue amount pretty much stayed at 192.4, if I recall correctly. So 192.4 is where I started for lean tissue. And then when I was on stage, it was around 192.8. And then I weighed in for the show at 198.6 pounds. I was probably on stage at like 202-ish, because I filled out and I went pretty aggressive on the stage on the show day. So I could create a full look. I was too conservative in the past with what I did with carbohydrates and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And we'll get to that. So it sounds like, at least in the first 8 weeks, we're sitting at like 220, 240 grams of protein, about 60 to 70 grams of fat. And then, not doing the exact math, but what would you say, like 300 or so grams of carbs, or let's even more here. Than that?
So 240 times four is 960. If it was 60 grams of fat, 540. So 1500. So that would give me 1200 to 1800. Yeah, so it was somewhere between 300 and 450 grams of carbs per day.
Yep.
So the hardest thing with fast food in general is getting a lot of carbs without the fat adding up too quickly. So I would have several ice cream cones per day. They're actually called ice dream cones because the fat content is too low for it to be actually ice cream. Fun fact, McDonald's ice cream cones and Chick-fil-A ice cream cones have very similar ratio of carbs to fat as like a Clif Bar, but less calories, and they taste a lot better. So for me, I get a really great palate sensation out of those ice cream cones. It's easily digestible carbohydrates. I would use those in my pre-training meal. I was doing lemonades as well to get the carbohydrates. A large lemonade, I believe a Chick-fil-A, is about 300-ish calories, all carbohydrates, 75 grams. So it's perfect post-training to replenish glycogen levels. And then I would also get carbs from the fruit cup. I got one of those each day. I would have an original fried chicken sandwich pretty much every day of the study. I had one of those. So got some carbohydrates from that. And then the egg white grills. The egg white grills are pretty low fat content, fair amount of protein and carbohydrates too. Most of my fat was coming from the fried chicken sandwich, but even the fried chicken sandwich that they sell, it's 18 grams of fat, 29 grams of protein, and only 3.5 grams of saturated fat. It's the least amount of saturated fat of any fried chicken sandwich in the fast food industry.
So would you go to Chick-fil-A once a day, get all of your food, and then just have it on hand? Or would you go multiple times because it was, you know, so close to the gym?
Yeah, so I liked going fairly often because I love the staff there. It was really fun seeing the team, talking with them, socializing. Got to know everyone there very, very well. Once I was done, I actually brought in the trophies. Took pictures with them in the kitchen. The owner had them stop work.
We might have cut out there, but we're just starting the recording again.
Perfect.
Got it. So you had a bunch of guys compete. You wanted someone from your gym to win, which you did. So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Like some other guys had some really crazy success in terms of body fat loss, which is amazing and super inspiring. When you're at these shows, for people who aren't aware of like how they're judged, and it, because it is a subjective, you know, sport, what does that look like? You're going on and you're posing. How many poses are you doing? How long does this take? How long are you there at the competition? What does that day really entail?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so it's a very weird sport. I'm drawn to the sport because of the science component, because of what you can do with nutrition. Because of its predictability, because there is a lot of literature on process. But the sport itself is super odd. So you get there, you get your touch-ups for your tan. They actually had to glue my posing trunks to my butt cheeks. so it's a very, you get like very comfortable with strangers. I mean, I get waxed for these shows, and they wax everything. So it's kind of funny. But the show itself is judged on muscularity. So how much muscle do you have? Conditioning, which is just how lean you look, as well as symmetry. So how does like the physique flow together? Do your muscles kind of match up with one another? Do you have obvious weak points, strength points, etc.? And then the way you pose will obviously highlight these positive attributes that you may have that fall under those categories of judging or not. So the posing is incredibly important. If you have two bodybuilders that have the same amount of muscle, same body fat, same symmetry, et cetera, the posing is going to either win or lose you the show. And they make you in the morning, at the morning show, you go up with your weight class and they walk you through these mandatory poses. So you do your front relax, which in bodybuilding, you're never relaxed. You're flexing everything. You have a side pose, you have a back pose, and then you do the other side. And then you'll do a pose where you're standing there flexing your biceps, front double bicep, side chest, side tri, rear double bi, etc. So it's almost like your cattle, very similar to if you go to the state fair and they're comparing all the cows next to each other, kind of walking them through different angles. That's kind of what bodybuilding is. After you get through the morning judging, being lined up next to people in your weight class, you come back for the night show and you do it again. And then they crown a winner in each weight group. And then from there, you compete against the winners of the other weight groups for best overall. Now, the only thing you're really thinking about during this day is timing up your pump up before you go on stage, timing up your meals along the way as well. And then potentially changing what you eat slightly, depending on if you're flat, if you're full, spilling over, etc. So there's little minor details that you'll address and kind of make slight adjustments with. But really, because so much of this is based on math and lean tissue and practices before the show, it's very predictable. And you kind of just follow the protocol that you set.
So did you bring Chick-fil-A to the show?
Oh,
is that
yeah.
What you had?
So the rules were I had to have Chick-fil-A all the way through. So show day, I normally would not recommend this, but I was pretty aggressive. I had 6 English muffins on show day. I had an original fried chicken sandwich. I had waffle fries for the first time. I had no waffle fries the entire diet. I had Chick-fil-A sauce. I had ice cream cone. I had a chocolate chip cookie from Chick-fil-A before I went on stage. I had 10 chicken minis. I did allow myself 10 calorie or less beverages throughout this process. So I did have some 10 calorie, no sugar monsters. Yeah, it was a lot of food, but it allowed me to fill out. And it was pretty cool to see the difference between how I even looked at the morning show versus the night show. Mm. I was not happy with my performance at the morning show. I knew I could have done better. So I practiced some visualization in between. I ate what I had to fill out based on the sodium, water, protein content. And then night show, I was able to go in with more confidence and do a lot better.
As you're going through the 16 weeks, how are you keeping track of all of your macros? Are you using an app? Are you using a Google Sheet?
Yeah, great question. So I used the Google Sheet initially to write down the initial macros and then what I had to order each day. And then I'm pretty simple. I don't believe in like changing things until you have to based on the rate of change. Because I was eating very similar things each day, I've actually never tracked my macros in an app. I just track in my head. I track my calories in my head. So yeah, I didn't use any apps because it's so consistent.
Yeah, but it sounds like your macros, I mean, you had changes over time, but it's not like you're
yeah, it was very minor changes.
Yeah, and when you're ordering from such a consistent place like that and having essentially the same things, it's actually easier, right? Because you just order what you normally order and you just know that as long as you did the numbers the first time around, you're good to go, right? So in a lot of ways, that's actually even easier than, you know, changing up what you're eating each day, which is, you know, how normally people are going to eat.
Yeah, Groundhog Day is typically the most simplistic approach, which is nice. There's less thinking involved. And again, as you get leaner, food tastes better. So the rate that I was losing at was greater than the food becoming unpalatable due to palate fatigue, that it actually improved in flavor along the way. So I felt no need to really make changes.
Now, after the show, I saw a Instagram live of you having a number of things, including like, I can't even describe how big this ice cream shake or sundae or something was. I mean, it was maybe 2 feet tall, like, and you've done, this is not the first time, like you've had like eating challenges. Mm-hmm. I think you also had like a 6-pound sushi roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I don't even know where to go with that, but I guess just talk about some of these, larger than life meals or challenges.
Yeah, so generally for bodybuilders, quick caveat, I recommend, especially the week after the show, enjoy like a meal after the show, whatever. But then for that week, eat what you ate prior, just a lot more, typically in like 1,000 calorie surplus, because the goal after a show is to put on some body fat, because being that lean is not good for you long term. But the same token, don't go wild with your eating because of the palatability reward theory hypothesis. If you eat things that taste too good, especially compared to what you're eating prior, especially to having bodybuilder taste buds where like everything tastes 10 times better, you're likely to way overindulge. Now, I like doing competitive eating. My first word as a kid was hungry. It's something that I'm good at. I'm competitive. That's why I do it. I think it's a fun way for me to put on some body fat. And I like winning things. So that's why I do these restaurant challenges. But yeah, I did a burger challenge in Atlanta. Ashley actually made me stop it about 3/4 of the way through because they didn't cook the meat at all. So it was like an 8-pound burger, 4.5 pounds of beef, and a bunch of other stuff on it. She goes, Mike, you can't do this because we're going to be in Atlanta for the next couple of days. We're doing all these fun activities. You cannot be sick. So that one was kind of a dud. The ice cream challenge was really challenging. There were six bananas in it, 18 scoops of ice cream, but really it was like 36 scoops and tons of brownies. And amongst other things, it was gigantic. It was probably the hardest ice cream challenge I ever attempted. I failed it by a couple ounces. I was pretty disappointed. And then the sushi challenge that I did, that was a speed one. You got 15 minutes to eat 6 to 8 pounds of sushi. It's just a giant roll. It's on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. Posted that one, and I completed it in like 10 minutes. I went really quickly at first. And then once I realized I was going to beat the challenge, I was able to enjoy the last like 12% of it. So that was a really delicious challenge. I love sushi. Fun fact, my PR on sushi, I once ate 300 pieces in one sitting and then 3 slices of cheesecake because my friends wanted to see how much sushi I could eat. And yeah.
How much did that cost you?
The 300 pieces was at an all-you-can-eat place. So it cost it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it cost them.
But they were really cool about it. I was reading, and then we...
file for bankruptcy.
Yeah, we just paid twice for me and like double tipped because we didn't want to like hurt the restaurant. And the restaurant got into it. They had fun with it.
And I'm sure they got some publicity from it.
Yeah, that was neat. But yeah, the fun thing with food challenges is if you eat it all, it's free.
Would you say that's your most memorable one out of all the ones you did?
Which one? Oh, the sushi one? Yeah, I did a grilled cheese challenge in the city here where it was 10 pounds of grilled cheese, a pound of fries. I really enjoyed that one. That was after the last show. I've done a 12-pound lasagna challenge. That was delicious. Food challenges always taste or hit the best right after a show because that's when your taste buds are on another level and everything tastes 10 times better. I remember we were in Napa after the last show. We went to this vineyard and they had these grapes on the vine. And one of the other bodybuilders and I were eating these grapes. And Ashley goes, what the heck are you guys doing? And we go, what? These are the best grapes we've ever had. And it was like 3 or 4 weeks after the grape season. And when we re-looked at them, we realized all the grapes were dried out. There's like spider webs on them. But to us, that was like the best tasting thing on the planet. So whatever challenges I do right after the shows, those are usually the most memorable because they taste better.
Have you ever competed in an actual, you know, like Coney Island hot dog eating contest? Like, have you ever done one where with other people?
Oh, I've done challenges. I did an apple pie eating contest once where you eat a whole apple pie and I won that. I had the fastest time. I did it in like 3 minutes. I haven't done too many challenges. Like that's the only one that I've done. I've done some of these restaurant challenges with friends where they try it as well, but nothing officially as far as part of the major league eating. So there's people in the MLE. It is an official organization. It is a sport, in my opinion. Some of these people are just way too impressive, like the Joey Chestnuts, the Matt Stoneys, Molly Skylers. Right. They would school me. I am definitely an amateur, maybe above average amateur, maybe post-show. Mm-hmm. I would be like the Chicago Bears. So maybe I could be in the MLE like post show for like a day or two. But after a couple of weeks, as I put on a little bit of body fat, I lose the ability. It's also important to note that with the food challenges, that's not how I always eat. I use that to put on some fat, but then in order to gain at a rate that I want to, most other days of the week, I'm eating at about calorie maintenance. And then that allows me to gain at the rate that I need to immediately out of the show. So there is like some control.
Yeah, so that was the next question. Yeah, what is a normal day of eating look like if you're, you know, not committing to Chick-fil-A and also not prepping for a show?
Yeah, so if my maintenance calories are 4,000, then I would have my calories at 4,000 post-show and then do the food challenges. So then I'm in that big surplus on the weekly basis, putting on the fat. And then outside of the shows, 90% of the time I'm massing. So 90% of the year, I'm trying to gain at a rate of 0.25 to 0.5% body weight per week. That rate seems to maximize the P ratio of muscle gain to fat gain. In order to be the most competitive on stage, it's not just who is the leanest, but it's who has the most muscle. And putting on muscle, as we know, takes a considerable amount of time, much more time than losing fat tissue. So I have to budget and bias more time into that. And then the cool thing is coming out of these shows, you're super sensitive to muscle gain, especially after a couple of weeks, once you put a little bit of fat on and your hormonal profile gets back to normal. So I try to really use that and be wise about that and not waste that opportunity. So instead of just eating Oreos.
Back to like the blood test, because I agree with you, what you said in the beginning. I think a lot of people are skeptical of things like seed oils, MSG. But it sounds like you're so, you know, steeped in the science of it and the lipid profiles and the blood markers. So what did you find of that? I mean, it's been so recent, so I don't know if you've even, you know, gotten those tests done or results.
I got all the metrics.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Share whatever you think is relevant.
Yeah. So my C-reactive protein, which is probably the best measurement for inflammation, it was good to begin with. It was at 0.22. Anything below one is super solid. So it was already pretty low. It went down to 0.19. So my inflammation decreased. My blood pressure went from averaging in the high 130s over 80s down to 110s over 70s, even down to the 60s for the bottom number. My high density lipoproteins, your good cholesterol, that went from 48 to 89. My VLDL, which is something that you don't want too high, went from 10 down to 7. So it was kind of neat to see these markers. I was healthy to begin with, pretty healthy. But to see them get even better, even with the high sodium content that I was having, the high amounts of MSG, and the high amounts of seed oil that I was consuming. So it just goes to show that when you lose body fat, that's could probably be like the number one way to improve most health markers. You have the guy at the University of Tampa that got a lot healthier a couple years ago, eating nothing but Twinkies and protein shakes. Obviously, there's easier ways to do it. I would not recommend that. Twinkies are not very nutrient dense. But because he was in a deficit, he lost a lot of weight. He improved his lipid profile quite considerably, as well as all other lab markers.
So if you're talking to either your clients or just the general public, and let's say they're able to get their, you know, BMR for the basal metabolic rate through either through like a DEXA or an InBody, what are your general recommendations in terms of macros? Is it that like 1 gram per pound of lean body mass, and then fill in your carbs as your activity level increases? Like, what are your general kind of nutrition recommendations?
Yeah, I think it kind of depends on the context of what they've been doing. So some individuals aren't ready for macro counting. Some individuals aren't ready for calorie counting. They have no education on nutrition. And there's so many like misconceptions, and you want to do it in a gentle way. You want to make sure that you're affirming people, that you're making people feel good about themselves. So for people that are super novel, we may focus on like introducing some nutrient dense food items more regularly that may taste good, or maybe focus on behavioral change, like increase, add an extra vegetable each day or an extra vegetable at each meal, or try to get a protein source at each meal. So that's oftentimes the case. So meeting people kind of where they're at and fine tuning it there. If I'm working with someone that is tracked calories, macros for a long time. They have very specific goals. Then depending on whether they want to mass, whether they want to cut based on what they've been doing macro-wise, we might make some tweaks. Also depending on their food preferences. Some people prefer more carbs. Some people prefer more fats based on their palates, et cetera. We may make adjustments based on those preferences. But generally, again, around a gram or so per pound of lean mass, if they're really lean and they're continuing to cut, may increase that a bit more. If they're massing, maybe a bit lower than a gram of protein per pound of lean mass, because the carbs are going to have those anti-catabolic effects and they're going to be protein sparing, so they don't need as much protein. Fat intake at least 0.3 grams per pound of lean mass, might have that a little bit higher starting out, and then filling the rest with carbs. And then depending on the type of training they do, if they do a ton of aerobic training, we might bias more the calories towards carbohydrates. If they're more sedentary and they don't need the energy from the carbs and they prefer fat, then maybe we'll have the fat content a bit higher. And then typically what I'll do first, if they're an athlete, is we'll decrease the fat slowly to that minimal effective dose for those health variables that they need to keep strong. And then from there, we may decrease the carbs slowly and then get more intentional with our meal timing as far as biasing more of the carbs around the training, because that's a precious resource. So if someone's in a huge hypocaloric state, maybe we'll put up to like 60% of their carbs around their training. But biggest things, wow, calories. Number two, macro breakdown. Eating mostly nutrient-dense foods, meal timing, and then supplementation. But supplements don't really matter.
Do you feel like maximizing that workout, especially post-workout period, is like how important that is that for like just a normal person working out?
Not important. So you talk about the anabolic window?
Right.
Yeah. There was one study that was done a couple of years ago comparing individuals that had protein right before their training, and then they had the same dosage of protein right after their training, and overall muscle protein synthesis was the exact same. So typically that window is a couple hours. So I want to let people know they don't have to have protein shakes right in their car and down it right when they get out of the gym. If they have to wait a little bit, or maybe they're not like immediately super hungry post-training and they have to wait like an hour, that's probably fine. The issue is when people get too optimal with their approach, that usually decreases adherence and consistency within the client and the athlete. So it kind of all goes back to those regular habits and behaviors that individuals have and trying to work within that, and not try to like maximize an extra percentage point or two of optimization when it creates too much stress. As far as protein goes, I generally recommend spreading it out to at least 4 feedings per day. 5 feedings, 6 feedings, 7 doesn't really seem to be that much more beneficial than 4 when we look at overall muscle protein synthesis occurring. So if you just took, for me, 240 grams of protein, I could do 60 grams per feeding, and I would end up utilizing all that protein if I spread it out amongst within normal meals.
I feel like we could go on for hours, but I want to be cognizant of time. What else, I guess, being able to speak to the general public, do you think people are misinformed about, would you want them to know, particularly when it comes to nutrition?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many topics that we could talk about with nutrition. And again, this is obviously like a huge passion. The biggest thing I want people to know is food doesn't have morality. There's no good food. There's no bad food. I think oftentimes we focus on black and whites, especially when it comes to our nutrition. Food is something that's meant to be enjoyed. Food is something that creates memories. Food can also be viewed as something as fuel for your body, so that you can create the adaptations of what you're looking for. And there's a balance to all of this. I'm a dietary agnostic. I believe you can eat what you want and hit your goals. So that would be the main takeaway. If you do have specific results, calorie tracking, counting your macros, and eating mostly foods that are super nutrient dense that keep you satiated, those are general recommendations that I give. But again, people can do whatever they'd like. And I want to help the world decrease the stress, the anxiety, and kind of the hazing that is surrounded within the nutrition sphere, especially within the fitness sphere.
Yeah, it's a world where people can be very polarizing.
Extremely
and,
so.
You know, a lot of it can be, you know, from like a business standpoint, like they need to be polarizing to get attention, just to get eyeballs on them, right? But I also feel like that's really dangerous in terms of people thinking like there's only one way.
There's only one way. And then I think it's really important with nutrition to look at the sum of the literature. So often I see people pulling individual animal studies out, trying to extrapolate information from that and correlate it to humans, or studies that haven't been shown to be regurgitated in a way that actually like supports theory. So like, for example, like artificial sweeteners, they're fine. All the literature surrounding them being negative is in animals where the dosage is thousands of times higher than what you would get. We could go into the chemistry of that at some point. As well. But yeah, there's just so much out there where people just don't know how to read statistics. They don't know how to read literature, and they don't spend enough time looking at the sum of the literature. So be careful when you're watching your favorite influencers on social media make big claims and use big words, because oftentimes they're bullshit.
I love it. We're going to have you back on to dive deeper into that and talk about all the other stuff, including semi-glutides and whatnot.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
In the meantime, where can people find you, follow you, look you up, see all the crazy food challenges you've done in the past and also will end up doing in the future? Where can they find you? Hey, folks. So we actually got cut off right at this moment. If you do want to find Mike on Instagram, you can find his gym by looking up MSP Gym. It stands for Midwest Strength Performance Gym. So MSP Gym on Instagram. And then he is at Mikey Swell, MikeySwell. So thanks again, Mike, for being on the podcast. I know we got cut off, but I appreciate your time and scientific expertise. Have a good one.